I'll introduce Mr. Phil Alton, who's a director of Boyce and Co Accounting up in Moree. So many of you will know of their business and their work. And so Phil is also was the past president of the Moree Chamber of Commerce, so he's very well and has lots of knowledge about businesses and farms and things in the Moree Shire, which after all is one of the biggest agricultural shires in the country. So Phil's going to talk about the impact of drought and government water buyback on the community around Moree. So please welcome him.
Thanks, Guy. Just before I start today, I guess one danger I face is that you'll perceive that my presentation might be a bit overly negative. One of the things I've found over the last 5 years in Moree, one of our great challenges, is getting people to face the new reality. The new reality following the impact of drought and the impact of government water buybacks going forward. And it's different segments of our community. But I really feel the bottom line is, as a community, we all need to face up to that new reality. And when we do, we will actually be able to move forward and come up with solutions. And the numbers I'm going to run through today are related solely to the Gwydir Valley, and Moree in particular. But obviously these numbers are reflective of other systems and other towns to varying degrees. So I'll see if I can get this working. A bit of a shameless plug straight up, just a little bit about Boyce. We're one of the largest professional services firms in regional Australia. We have 5 offices across New South Wales, and we're established in 1973 with more than 35 years of experience. And these days there's 150 of us, including 15 directors and associate directors. I guess in our history, we've jointly produced the Australian Cotton Comparative Analysis, and that was jointly produced with the assistance of the CRDC and the Cotton CRC. And of course, I'm a director of Boyce at Moree, which is the largest population centre in the Gwydir Valley. Big disclaimer, I'm not an economist. I'm not a researcher. But I have witnessed the impact of drought on regional communities at a number of levels, I guess as an advisor to primary producers, including many irrigators, and small business in regional towns, as a past president of the Moree Chamber of Commerce, as a business owner, and of course as a father of a young family living in Moree. So what am I going to cover today? I'm going to cover what I perceive as the impact of drought on the Gwydir Valley irrigation industry and then the flow-on impact of that to the Moree community. The perceived impact of government water buybacks on the irrigation industry in the Gwydir Valley and where to from here for the Gwydir Valley and the Moree community, and I really feel there's common themes that will come through for each of your communities. The impact of drought. I guess quite clearly here you can see, if I can get my pointer working, you can see this graph represents the last 27 years of extractions out of the Gwydir Valley, both regulated and general security. Megalitres on the left, years on the bottom. A couple of things here. We can see reduced extractions as a result of drought from 92-93 through to 95-96. And we can see this particular 7 years here being sustained reduced extractions due to drought. One of the things I'm going to focus on in my presentation today is the impact on our community of these 7 years as opposed to the average of the previous 10 years. And you can see in that 10 years, 4 years drought affected, 6 years reasonable extraction. So possibly it is an indicative comparison. Just looking at those 27 years, so the average extractions over the whole period, 268,400 megs a year. Interestingly, the average extractions in the 10 years, 92-93 to 01-02, were nearly 293,000 megs. And the average extractions from 02-03 to 08-09, those 7 years, were 164,000. So you can see there's a significant reduction in the extractions. And just to go back, if you had been a small business owner setting up in Moree in this period, you're obviously going to see a very different business going into this period. So what's the impact there? Reduced water availability. And you see there what I've just done is spelled out the extractions in those particular, the last 7 years. And in fact, we'll actually see a similar pattern if we looked at 09, 010 and then 10, 11 shaping up, you know, similar as we sit here for the Guido Valley, if not a bit worse. The red line representing the average extractions in the 10 years, 92, 93 to 01, 02, 292,000. So you can see in each of those 7 years, we fell well below the average of the previous 10 years, particularly toughest 06, 07, 04, 05 and 03, 04. So if we took those reduced extractions as compared to the 10-year average, what does that actually mean in terms of reduced cotton production? I've used a number of 9 megs a hectare, taking into account on-farm losses from the water extracted, bearing in mind it's both regulated and supplementary. And we can see there that the red bars effectively represent reduced cotton area as opposed to the previous 10 years. So 06, 07, you know, up to 18,000 hectares, and I guess down to sort of a bit over 10,000 hectares in 05, 06, and in 02, 03. The next step from there, I thought, was to say, well, okay, if that area wasn't planted to dryland cotton, what would it have been planted to? And my assumptions, I've based that it was actually planted to dryland wheat. And the assumptions, planted to dryland wheat. What I've done is I've applied the average direct costs from the Australian cotton comparative analysis and for cotton. The average direct cost for dryland wheat based on Boyce dryland benchmarking that we prepare and on client data. The assumption, rightly or wrongly, that many of the indirect overheads are actually fixed costs and they would have been spent regardless of the reduced area or not. So my analysis excludes those. And so we move on to the next graph. And, we get some really substantial results. So the green being the expenditure on direct dryland wheat costs as opposed to the opportunity lost as a result of drought or money that would have been spent on direct irrigated cotton costs in those affected years. So you can see there, $31.6 million is the difference between that area in 02-03 being planted to dryland wheat as opposed to being planted to dryland cotton. 54 million in 03-04, up to 57 million and 52 million over here. So we can see that the lost opportunity as a result of drought is very significant. Now, I'm not an economist. I've got to say that again. But I do understand when you're looking at the impact of dollars lost in a community, you need to talk about a multiplier effect. Now, if I was to spend a significant amount of time looking at these, I could work through based on our cotton comparative analysis and understand, you know, what components lost wages, what component is lost herbicides, etc., and apply different multiplier effects. But rightly or wrongly, I've decided to apply 3 times multiplier effect to that lost expenditure to work out the reduced economic activity in the Guido Valley, or effectively Moree, as a result of drought in those years. Woo. And we can see there what we have, some pretty significant numbers. So 06-07, $172 million in lost economic activity as a result of reduced direct cropping expenditure. $164 million in 03-04 and $158 million over in 08-09. Pretty significant numbers. Pretty significant numbers if you're a small business owner in Moree. So the cumulative effect over those 7 years, 02-03 to 08-09, in reduced economic activity is around about $938 million. Just remembering, but that's purely just based on reduced direct cropping expenditure. Not included in that is reduced capital expenditure, replacing the tractor, doing the irrigation earthworks, upgrading the pump station. That's not included in that. Obviously, there would be reduced capital expenditure in that period. Also not included in that are reduced drawings by proprietors. Now, you can make the assumption that you'd still have the same amount of proprietors on a reduced area, but I'll bet something significant that most proprietors in that time will have actually wound back their drawings and personal expenditure. So that also has an impact. So what have we seen? What have we seen in Moree in that period? Well, I don't have the numbers to back it up, but I believe we've seen a disproportionate population decline in Moree. I believe that the population decline that we've seen is actually greater in proportion to the jobs lost as a result of the downturn in cotton due to drought. And anecdotally, evidence suggests that the population we've lost has significantly been in the 25 to 45 year age demographic. That's been most heavily impacted. And if you think about that demographic, they're most normally, likely involved in kids' sport. They're involved in organising the junior tennis or junior soccer, the Boy Scouts. They're involved socially in the community. So that has a huge social impact on a town, losing that particular age demographic. As well, that demographic tends to spend a bit more money in town. They tend to spend a bit more discretionary spending at retailers. I guess you've only got to ask my wife. As a result, we've really seen a retail sector in decline, but we've really, the impact has been a little unusual in that if we looked at the business sector in Moree, the retail sector and probably the other small business sector or other part of the small business sector have been affected differently. Absolutely, the retail sector is in decline in Moree, and it's probably doing it as tough now as it has in the last 6 or 7 years. It's really suffered. The other small businesses in town but have suffered from the population decline, more so on the labour force side of things. Absolutely, they're a smaller business than what they were previously, but absolutely they could grow that business if they could find the people. And that's why I think the population decrease has been a bit disproportionate as opposed to the job losses. I'm just going to move now on to the impact of water buybacks on the Guider Valley irrigation industry. It is hard to know exactly what's been purchased out of our valley. But with the help of Mike Murray from Guider Valley Irrigators, we're reasonably comfortable there's at least been 220,000 megs of general security water purchased out of our valley by both the state and federal governments combined, and about 85,000 megs of supplementary water. Overall, this is nearly 20% of the general security water in the Guider Valley that's been purchased by the government, so it's significant. If we applied average availability rates to the general security and supplementary water, this would mean, as opposed to an average year, we'll see a reduction of about 126,000 megs in extractions out of the Guider Valley. So what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, in an average year, those are the availabilities that we would have had, so we'll lose 126,000 meg. So what's the impact of that? Well, working on 9 megs a hectare again, including on-farm losses, we're looking at a reduced irrigated cotton area of approximately 14,000 hectares based on average years. And based on the numbers that we do with clients most weeks of the year in terms of budgeting and analysing their financial performance, if we looked at, say, irrigated cotton direct costs of $3,580 a hectare, some of your cotton growers will be saying, gee, you're a bit overpriced there, but just remembering that actually includes ginning in that expenditure. Say dry land wheat around $460 a hectare, that'll be somewhere like $43.7 million a reduction in average annual direct cropping expenditure in the Guaita Valley as a result of government water buybacks. Once again, apply the 3x multiple effect, and that's 131 million average reduction in economic activity as a result of that reduction in cropping expenditure. And once again, a reminder, that excludes the impact of reduced capital expenditure and excludes the impact of reduced drawings by proprietors. So the number's probably greater than the number I have there. Once again, going back to the cotton comparative analysis and looking at that 14,000 hectares, that equates to a reduction of 82 less full-time equivalent employed people directly on cotton farms in the Guaita Valley. Now that's just employed directly on cotton farms. That excludes the gin, it excludes the mechanic in town. So when you actually start to think about that number, it's at least several hundred jobs in the Guaita Valley that'll be lost, both direct and indirect, as a result of the government water buybacks. Just while I'm talking about that, I must make it clear that I don't begrudge anybody the opportunity to sell their water, but nonetheless it's important that we do understand what the impacts are of this government policy. So where to from here? We've seen the economic decline due to drought and associated population decline. As a result of the government water buybacks, the cotton industry in the Guaita Valley will not be what it was previously. It'll be a very different landscape. We need to work together as a community, together, to hold our decline. And one of the things during my time as President of the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm continually lobbying, is looking at generating new sources of income or economic activity in our community. And we're well placed in Moree, and I'm sure you're well placed in your respective communities with other potential projects. In Moree, I think that our strengths are hot artesian water tourism and the potential to develop that, and also value-adding opportunities for agriculture just because of our sheer scale of production in the Moree Plains Shire Council and our location, relatively central location to Brisbane and Sydney. Our other challenge, but, is that we need to maintain and rebuild our social infrastructure to encourage people to return to Moree. It'll be all well and good to increase economic activity in our town, but one of our challenges is to get people to move back to Moree. And we need to work hard on improving our social infrastructure. And we can only do that as a community, as a combined effort. You know, it's not only about our Shire Council, it's not only about our business owners, it's about, as a community, volunteering to coach the junior soccer, whatever it might be, improving the social infrastructure. The other thing that I feel passionate about is that we need to work with other affected communities to lobby for structural adjustment assistance. For some of these potential new economic activities in our towns, we're going to need injections of seed capital to get them up and running. The biggest opportunity I can see is structural adjustment payment, and I believe we've got a cause for it. But if we want to be heard, we've got to work together. Any questions?
Questions? I'm not sure we've got Delvine Delaney in the microphone or not.
Yell out. Is there any other sort of key social indicators that would point to verification of some of the numbers that you've got, like numbers of seats sold on aircraft or trains and some of these other sorts of things that identify where the social capital is starting to leak out of town?
Yes. Look, I don't know the answer to your question. I guess a lot of my evidence is in black and white numbers and not so much in terms of evidence in terms of social impact. My evidence is probably just anecdotal from what I'm seeing living in town and seeing friends move away and that sort of thing. But I will be interested, you know, obviously when reports like Judith's are finished to actually see that evidence, because I think it will be there. Thank you.
Oh, thanks very much, Bill, for that. I just thought that was a fantastic presentation. Just a great example of how someone's taken the time to pull together some local information, some good hard facts and figures there, And in terms of what this fourth session is about, improving our understanding about social and economic indicators, I mean, if that didn't get you down the road as part of your thinking, I don't know what will. So thanks again, Phil. That was a really great presentation. Our next speaker, I'm not actually sure what... Phil's an accountant, and he said he's not an economist. I'm not entirely sure what the difference is. our next speaker, I think, is an economist, although Neil told me he has a wine chemistry degree, which is an interesting background for someone working in this area.